Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of Quiver the Green Arrow podcast for the episode Damaged. I am your host, Michael Cohen, and with me...
I'm your other host, Amanda Konkin. Thanks for listening to us.
Cool. Well, we're back. We're a little bit late again this week, but,
yeah,
but it seems like...
We're going to be on time next week.
It'll yeah. It, you know what? Thursday or Friday, right?
Yeah,
like, look forward in your feed, Thursday or Friday. Yeah. Not necessarily one or the other. Maybe sometimes even Saturday or Sunday. You never know. But we're back to talk an exceptionally good episode for these first five episodes. In fact, like, the best episode yet. This episode was on par with... some of the better episodes of Smallville or Supernatural, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, I think it was very good.
This one really, it's
hit its stride.
There was a dip last week in the quality, and we've got a few fans that out there that actually, you guys, we have a new nickname for all you guys out there who are fans of Arrow. You guys are Arrowheads.
What?
So that's a phrase now. We've coined the term. It's minted, and you guys can use that as you. As you will.
We should Wikipedia that.
We should Wikipedia that. If in fact it's always kind of lame if you go and you Wikipedia your own exploits. So if one of you guys
there,
if somebody out there can go Wikipedia that for us and add a page for Arrowheads, and cite that it was coined on the fifth episode of Quiver the Green Arrow podcast, we would be forever indebted to you, and we'll be your friends. I think that's fair.
You know what? Our friendship does not come cheaply, Mike. I think that that's a really good thing. Yeah. You have to work for it. I think it's
well,
it's
and
fantastic.
It comes with certain benefits to be our friends, right?
I know, because we tell you you're awesome every day. And we'll write to you on Facebook.
I'm not committing to that. I'm not telling anybody that they're awesome every day.
I can tell you you're awesome in my head, psychologically. Like,
mentally, like telepathically.
Yes, there you go. That's the word I'm looking for.
Send good vibes.
I will.
So speaking of our awesome fans, the Arrowheads out there.
That's great.
We've got an email. You want to read that?
It is, yeah. So Amber Morris sent us an email, and it's really, this is one of the benefits of us doing our podcast on Thursday or Friday, because people can comment on the episode that we're talking about. So we really appreciate this, because it's very topical and sort of on par with what we're talking about. So, hi guys! Just wanted to say I enjoyed this week's Arrow so much more than last week. I was glad you saw the same issues with the pacing. I also thought the dialogue was cheesy and over-explain-y last week. I love that over-explain-y. It's kind of a Joss Whedon-esque term. Good job, Amber. I was worried that the CW put a lot of effort into the first three in order to get a full season pickup, and then just let it fall to pieces. But my faith in this show was restored this week. I loved the way Oliver was able to build his case about not being the vigilante, and that he set up the whole thing, the whole being caught on video thing. Brilliant. Who was the guy in the mask on the island? I laughed out loud when Diggle was exploring the Bat Cave, in quotes, especially when he pricked his finger on the arrow. Yes, that was actually quite funny. So her last sentence then, I'm excited to see where this season takes us, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode. Thanks, Amber. So are we. I'm looking forward to hearing our thoughts on this episode as well. We appreciate your comments. That's putting us up in a great place, because I think that we're sort of on par with you, right? Really coming off of last week's episode, which I would say... out of the five that we've had so
actually,
far.
We got a lot of emails and messages to the Facebook this week, which is awesome. You guys rock, and keep sending in your messages. And we do, like, I'm reading all of them.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I do. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm going in there. I feel bad. Mike already comments on things, and I'm going through, like, I'll just like it. I like all your comments.
Yeah, so, like, even if you're not getting read on the podcast, know that we're reading these things, and we're trying to interact with you guys as much as possible. So don't stop. And like, the more you send stuff in, the more likely it is that we'll read something on the podcast. But I did notice that everybody kind of felt the same as we did. They the third episode was a great episode, and then the fourth episode came in and it kind of dipped, and it didn't really meet the expectations that the third one had set. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth episode came in and went right back up to where the fourth one was, and even exceeded it a little bit. So this is the new watermark for the series. So With that, I think we can get into it, and we can answer one of those questions. The guy in the mask,
yeah,
is Deathstroke.
So that was the big spoiler thing.
Yeah, so we've been waiting for his reveal, and that's him. So, yeah. But I think maybe the guy says it once. I think he says, "Deathstroke, get in here," or something like that. He might not even say his name. He might just say he's all. I think he says he's all yours. So
yeah, I don't think they say who it is.
Yeah, we'll point that out when we get there. It's fair that if you're not a huge DC Comics fan, you're just maybe you're a CW fan, so you're tuning into this because you're waiting for Supernatural to start, and you go, "Oh, okay, well, this is a cool show. I guess I'll watch it every week." Yeah. Then it's perfectly okay to go on the Facebook page or to email us and say, "Who was that guy? I don't understand." That's cool. That's good. Mm-hmm. It's fine to not have that knowledge and to ask because there's tons of us out there who are happy to explain.
Including, you can explain it to me as well.
Who Deathstroke is?
It's a thing, because other people know more than us and they post it, or they ask us questions. I think that's what this podcast is here to do, facilitate a lot of that sort of dichotomy.
Well, we want to be a guide, sort of, because we're like an episode commentary to every episode, and we're going to miss stuff, so you guys fill in the gaps that we don't have, and hopefully we're filling in gaps for some people out there.
And I just want to throw back to that first episode that you pointed out. We were on this Deathstroke thing from day one, where Mike was like, "That mask, if everybody goes back and watches that first episode again, there's a mask on a stick on the beach, and it's the Deathstroke mask."
So there was that, and there was another comic shout out that I will point out when we get to it. One specifically to Black Canary, that if you didn't get you missed it entirely.
I think I got it.
Okay,
we'll
point it out when we get there, and we'll point out any other comic correlations that we can find.
It's good. They're hitting their subtleties now. Remember, I was begging
it's
for this subtlety,
head, right?
And I really am liking it, so I'm ready to dive right in. Let's dive in. Episode 5,
okay, let's do it.
Damaged. Let's see that double meaning in this episode. Damaged, they are always playing these things. I have to shout out again Stephen Amella as well. I keep hearing tidbits from people all over the city about just how a professional actor he is, and just really on top of things. And I think they're doing a fantastic job. And he's the one. He's actually how I found out that Arrow in Canada was on Tuesday this week, as opposed to Wednesday.
Yeah.
He's just so on top of things with his show and the network.
He's being so wicked. So wicked with us, the fans. With all of us people out there watching the show. And he's interacting on a regular basis. He's all over Facebook and everything.
And you can see he legitimately cares about the show and what the network does to it and how people are consuming it. I really like
And it's coming through. It's coming through in the episodes because his performance is getting better and better. Because I think that as he went on in filming, he got more and more invested. Any good actor does, in the life of that character. But he's kind of geeking out as much as us sometimes. You see some of his pictures and stuff on Facebook with toy arrows and stuff.
Yeah, it's great. So 5 years ago, we're starting in the island here with that lovely CG rabbit.
Yeah.
I didn't notice the first time I was
That's a very CG rabbit. But that's okay. No animals were harmed in the making of this episode.
Yeah. It could be just really good animatronics. I don't know.
It could have been blue screen.
That's true. Maybe that would have made more sense. It looked somewhat sort of fake.
It looked a little fake, but that's okay. Good. It was only on there for a second before it got an arrow to the face.
That's fine.
Courtesy of, I've forgotten his name already.
Yeah.
I know. I don't think we wrote it down.
Oh, look at our cheat sheet.
No, he's not on our cheat
sheet. Failed us.
But the Dark Archer character who's teaching Oliver how to
not shoot.
He's giving him the best advice that he can. Oliver's just not quite there yet.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
It's nice to see them.
You will die badly.
Yeah.
I have to say, that was hilarious. And, I love it when people can deadpan stuff like that. And he just did it so good. He's like, yeah, you will die badly.
Yeah.
And I really like their relationship. You can already sort of see it building and how Oliver sort of, begrudgingly respects him, but is still kind of this Abercrombie boy, as I like to call him when he's on the island.
With his long hair.
He's getting it. He gets it, but he also sort of, he's going to be a little bit flippant because he's just who he is. And it's super, Oh my! So they have the metal handcuffs on him and in the wooden cage. Like, I love the, like,
yeah, it's like good. Bamboo or whatever.
And then we
switch back here to Starling City, and
the second time he got captured for real by people. There's a lot of those correlations between
his present incarceration and his previous incarceration.
That's part of the dichotomy of the episodes. Don't we always have that where he's like showing us something, but it's good. Where, and then you have Detective Lance, who's still being kind of like, he just throws it out there. He's like, oh, don't tell me how many times you've been arrested.
Yeah.
And so he's sort of like relishing in this, the fact that he got Oliver. But also, I mean,
it's we get a lot of Detective Lance in this episode, actually. And
delightful.
And a lot of his scoffing. A lot of scoffs. I think we're on par or on pace for one scoff per episode, but then this episode like just ramps it up, and he scoffs in
there
almost
every scene. There are other people scoffing in this episode too.
There are.
It's great. But I'm actually Detective Lance, I'm like really impressed with his eyes, just sort of, I don't know, they do a lot without really doing a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm totally talking over this whole him explaining away the duffel situation, which, I don't know, the only thing I will have to say about this episode, as much as this episode was lovely, he could have thought of something smarter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's, like, my big thing, my big giant flaw with this episode is the, like, really? That was on purpose, Oliver? Really?
I think one of the things that they had to do, I think what they're going for is that Oliver realizes, he says it at one point, that people are going to put together I showed up and so does this vigilante at the same time.
Yeah.
There needs to be no question that I am not the vigilante. So I think that he's intentionally building a good case against himself so that he can, like, beyond a shadow of a doubt, prove that he's not the vigilante.
Right.
Which, this is the difficult line that this episode walks.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to relate to Oliver in this episode, and I think I had said this to you earlier, because in this scene right here, he's looking Walter and his mother straight in the eye and saying, I'm not the vigilante.
Yeah.
We know that he is the vigilante, so on the one hand, we're going like, well, we don't want him to get arrested. We don't want him to end up in jail. Yeah. We want him to be out there serving justice, you know, at the tip of an arrow and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, it's like, this isn't heroic behavior.
And you just said, like, and we want him serving justice, but we're like, at the sake of justice, right? Yeah. Like, the whole thing is like, he's working in the justice system right now and, like, lying to get out of it. It's like, the thing about this episode and what makes it, I think, so fascinating is the idea that Oliver should go to jail.
Yes.
He's killed people.
Yeah, he's with murdered his bone, people.
Right?
Yeah.
So this whole episode where we as the fans, like, it's kind of a risky thing to do in your fifth episode to be like, here, we think that you have invested in this character enough in five episodes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and, you know, the entire fandom behind Green Arrow, but that aside, right? That you will go with us on this journey and still root for him. So.
Yeah. It is very difficult. I've said it a few times now that it's almost like this is the fifth season of the show.
Yeah.
Because we have 5 years of backstory of him on the island.
Yeah.
That I think that the writers have a pretty good idea. Like, they might not know every single plot point that they're going to bring forward between now and the end of the series, or however long they keep doing the flashbacks. But I keep saying it's really difficult for Stephen Amell to come in and play these two characters, Oliver 5 years ago and Oliver today.
Oh, yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're putting him in the place of someone who has to have embodied that character for 5 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so at that point where Tom Welling was in the fifth season of Smallville, he's at now.
I just realized that the judge is, she was in Intimate Apparel at the Arts Club. She's a local Vancouver theater actor. Sorry for that tangent.
That's the local behind the scenes. We're in the courtroom now, and Oliver is planning to defend himself.
Not a good idea. Oliver. But, you know, and so we didn't talk about it at all, but when I've started to realize, we say, like, oh, and she comes in, but I'll say, Laurel walking in now. I just started realizing that about things. I haven't actually explained what you can't see us talking about. But so Laurel was approached by Oliver's mom to defend him because he wants Laurel to defend him. And
yeah.
She comes in and shows her thing and shows everybody that she's actually going to defend her ex-boyfriend who was responsible for her sister's death. So let's see where this goes.
Yeah. Because his point being that if he can convince her, he can convince anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And if he can convince her, she can convince her father.
Right.
So that, that's really... That's the through line for bringing Laurel in. It's it's a little bit tenuous. Like there's a thread there that you're kind of like, I don't know. It's a little bit contrived, but it does make sense.
I love that extra in the background, just like holding a camera with like no motion on his face, just like holding the little like recording device out. Sorry. I should actually pay attention to what they're talking about. I saw that I've already had time to process this episode because I watched it like a day ago. So I've already thought about the episode in my head. And now I'm commenting on things that I probably are not very helpful to you guys. But, you know, it's all good. I'm like pointing out like the superfluous people in the background. But it's good.
But I think I had something and then I lost it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
He's getting his ankle bracelet for house arrest.
Yes.
And his $15 million bail. That he had to post. That's, anyways, they are really rich.
Yes.
So, it's all good. Oh, and our only, I'm pretty sure this is the only time Merlin is in this episode, is here when he's at the house.
Yeah, I don't think he shows up. I don't think he shows up at the party.
They're just doing it so that they're like, look, he still exists as a character he's still in the show.
Yeah.
So that we are still keeping, you know what, I would say of all of the people that are a part of the series, I feel like the one thing that, is he's a superfluous character right now.
Yeah.
Like, I really feel and, like...
Well, the sister as well.
Yeah.
The sister as well, which we got an email from somebody about that, saying, you know, that she's a little bit... It seems like her stories are a little bit weak.
They're contrived because they're waiting for a time to use them, and they don't need them right now, and they really... I mean, it would have been just as powerful if Charming Merlin was off doing business deals around the world, and they mentioned him maybe once or twice, and then... Yeah. Right? Like, mind you, that's me just sort of putting on what I want to see it.
Well, you know, they really needed a supporting cast in order to hang the show on.
Fair enough.
So, you know, we've got all these characters and there's not really a lot to do with them.
Yeah.
And we're really focused in this episode on Laurel, on Detective Lance, and on Walter.
Yeah.
Like, Walter's part in this episode is pretty big. And we get John Barrowman back as well.
Yeah.
So, if we're going to talk screen time, so screen budget as well as cash budget, like actual filming budget, there's just really not a lot of room for those other characters. But you're right. They do throw Tommy in there just so that we can go, okay, there he is. Yeah. So Detective Lance has a bit of an issue with Laurel defending Oliver.
And you get, we exhaled that type of scoff.
Yeah,
I love closed captioned. And she sighed. But you get the first hint about, like, his resentment about the mom leaving, too. Like, they hadn't really talked about that before, that, like, her family kind of got broken up
when her sister died,
right?
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. And then you got Diggle here coming in to talk to Ollie about what's happening and saying that Oliver's caught. And then here's Oliver's explanation. I knew they'd arrest me. All part of the plan. So, I feel like... Getting arrested may have been part of the plan. I don't know if it was, like, particular... I don't know.
I think that he knew from the time that he sort of started putting all of this vigilante stuff together that at some point he was going to have to craft the perfect cover story.
Right, yeah.
Just like Bruce Wayne does in Batman Begins, right?
Yeah.
And he has that moment where he decides that he's got to go out and be the billionaire playboy.
Yeah.
So that he has a cover story for why he's out all night and sleeping all day and that sort of thing.
Great part of that.
That is a really great part of that
like
movie.
Swimming in the...
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you really get the cold-hearted Ollie in the scene with Diggle, where he's just really like, I don't care about my family. I understand that they're suffering. That's not at all what I'm here for. Look at this arm deal that's going down. And so we set up then the sort of plot of his character as Darrow.
These are the moments when I feel like the actual Oliver Queen is coming out really strongly, and they're writing it to the character from the comic books. It's those moments where his altruism and almost his ego for the heroics and stuff like that gets in the way of his personal relationships, which is, that's very Oliver from the comics, where it's like, you know, like and it's very Batman, it's very Superman. Mm-hmm. The mission comes first, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's always where these guys are at. That's what drives them to be superheroes, mm-hmm. is they're like, look, I know that I might be hurting the people that I care about, mm-hmm. but what's going to hurt them more is if this city continues to rot from the inside out. So that's the point that he's at.
Oh, we just missed Diggle pricking his finger on
the
arrow.
Yes, yeah, Diggle.
Looking at all the cool
exploring
gadgets.
The arrow cave and figuring out all of these crazy things.
And I like that there was the throw out to, or the shout out to the fact that Oliver was like, what do all of us billionaire superheroes have?
Which is a subtle nod to Batman, Ted Kord, the original Blue Beetle. Well, the second Blue Beetle, technically.
Yeah.
But to all of these different characters that we have that are billionaire or millionaire superheroes. So I think that's an acknowledgement that there might be some other superheroes out there, and that Oliver might not be the first one.
Oh yeah, I would say they're setting that tone for the world, I think, which is nice.
Yeah, well, because we have super villains, right? So if there's already super villains, then there must be somewhere in another city other heroes. Well, and I think we're going to see that pretty soon.
As
the Huntress
is coming. You just said the train tracks was like the train between, it was the city next to Gotham City. And also Iron Heights is from the world. Right? So they're really already are throwing all these things in there for us. We totally talked over the Walter scene with his security guard where he's...
Yeah, so Walter's sending a security guard to inspect some stuff.
To move the head of security.
Yeah. And that's not going to work out so well
for him. It's good. So we've got the lawyers here, or
this is his opportunity to plea bargain, right? And Oliver's saying no, not going to happen, because the option is that he's suffering from post-traumatic stress. And that they'll throw him in essentially an insane asylum, right? That they'll throw him in some psych ward somewhere. And obviously that's not what he wants. That's not what anybody wants, I think. So even more so than the jail thing, I think that's not even...
Okay, so this polygraph thing. So he said, I want to take a polygraph to convince you of my innocence. And I'm really curious, because I sort of talked a little bit about this, but his, like, skill of lying is something that we're talking... Is that sort of shadowed in his bout on the island, that we're talking about him learning to lie there? Is that sort of where this is going?
Yeah, I think so, because later on we'll see that Abercrombie, Oliver, is not so great at lying.
Lying, yeah.
So and now like he has the ability to fake the polygraph.
Yeah.
Although... Maybe not faking it for everybody.
Yeah.
But, his motives are really weird in here, and they're kind of up and down and all over the place, because on the one hand, he's saying, like, I just need to convince essentially Laurel and Detective Lance, and then, you know, theoretically everything else will fall into place.
Yeah.
I think that's his angle. It's not 100% clear at times, because I think they also need to worry about the fact that legally he also needs to be acquitted of this. Like, it needs to be clear that he is not the Green Arrow. But they really hammer home the emotional aspect of it.
He's got to walk as Abercrombie boy. I think he's been really working on this. Again, like, talking to people that have, like, sort of seen him working and out and about, that he really is throwing a lot into these two different personalities and really focusing on how he's playing both of them. But if you just see how he's being, like, guided through this camp here, he really... There's a certain way that he's carrying himself, and he just really has sort of got it nailed down. I'm really starting to respect these two parts of him a lot right now, so...
Yeah, now, this guy is really interesting, this British... secret military guy, and I'm not 100% sure.
But he looks so familiar. He's
Edward Fires. Now, I feel like
he's from
somebody
something.
May have sent me a message explaining who Edward Fires is, and I didn't get around to reading it just yet.
Oh, man,
it just got sent in earlier today.
Have time for our, like, sit down and look over our Facebook before we start these things. we're gonna have a good pattern by, like, the 12th episode. It'll be gold. Yeah.
This actor I thought was really great up until a certain point, and then his performance starts to fall apart a little bit. All of this whole scene with the two of them sitting here, and he's questioning him, and he's trying to figure out who Yao Fei is.
Right, yeah.
Or where he is. We've got a picture of him from when he was in China. He's a China military officer of some sort. And he's asking him, who is he? Do you know this man? Mm-hmm. And he says, no, who is he? And the guy's like, you are a poor liar.
Yeah.
The intimidation factor here is really good. That I feel like we clearly realize that this guy's a bad guy.
Yeah.
That these guys are all bad guys.
Well, we don't know what it is, though, still. They've been there for a while, and we're still trying to figure it out. But I love this, the idea that the island is Mandarin for purgatory.
Yes.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
But that's the point when he says, but I can make it a living hell or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And at that point, I feel like his performance kind of starts to go downwards a little bit. Maybe it was just like it
gets overtly intimidating. Maybe he's really good at reserved intimidation.
Yeah, yeah. It's the second that he stands up, he's kind of much less. He's much less intimidating. But that he's yours now. So yeah, we don't get an introduction to Deathstroke.
No, we just. But got there the man he is. In the mask.
My one complaint about the Deathstroke costume, about the look of him, And this is a complaint that I have with almost all movie and TV superheroes and supervillains. I don't want to see his pupils.
I don't
want to see the eyes.
That's a weird complaint.
For me, it really needs to be that the stylized comic book white eyes. There's something about that it's just like that. That's what makes it. I don't know. That's what makes it comic booky.
Nothing. I can see that.
There really aren't that many things out there that have captured that.
Right.
We get a lot of that. This isn't that show. We get a lot of the the blacked out makeup or underneath a domino mask and that sort of thing. Right.
Okay, yeah.
And It doesn't jive with me. It bugs me when it's Batman. It bugs me when it really bugs me with Deathstroke. I feel like if they had had some sort of like almost goggle like thing, kind of like what they do with Spider-Man, like toned down to be more just over the eyeballs, that he would be much more intimidating that way, right? If we weren't able to see the eyes, if it was just this sort of cold, emotionless face, right? Because that's one of the things about Deathstroke in that mask. And we have this totally throwaway scene
with Speedy.
With Speedy and the arrowhead that he apparently got in a Beijing
gift shop. Yeah.
Which I don't think is true. I don't know. Have we seen where he got the arrowhead from?
No, we haven't.
We haven't, but I don't think it's true. Well, it's obviously from Yao Fei, right?
I thought that was the obvious part of it, is that like I didn't even think that through. Maybe I'm wrong now, but I thought it was like, clearly he's lying about that he didn't get it at a Beijing airport, that it is an arrowhead from something important that he gave to her. But I don't really understand the points of all the, they're really hammering down this idea of his family in this episode as well. I'll say, like, while they may have found their sweet spot in this episode, they still sure haven't found the stop banging us over the head with the intention and stakes of the character.
I think one of the things is just that they have all of these other characters, like we were saying earlier, all of these supporting cast members that they have to do something with on a regular basis. So that scene felt really shoehorned in. It really didn't serve any purpose for the greater story.
Yeah.
I would have much rather spent a little bit more time with these two, with John Barrowman and Moira.
What's his name? John Barrowman? Let's just call him John Barrowman.
With Captain Harkness here.
Yeah.
Because this is where we're starting to get the really interesting stuff. One thing that I wanted to talk about was the claws are coming out with Moira a little bit.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like that her family's possibly being implicated.
Yeah.
And that these guys think, you know, maybe Oliver is the vigilante.
Yeah.
And we're getting a clearer indication of who are the bad guys
and who are the people
that might just be mixed up in some bad stuff.
Which I feel is a cop-out for Moira's character. I'll actually throw that in, that I'm actually really upset that she was
that
like, I just did what you told me to.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, ugh, if you set up somebody to be a bad guy fall through. This is what bothered me about Tessa's character in Smallville too, though. So, but I got, yeah, I kind of got over that. But like, it was one of those things. It's like, okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you then need us to have more stakes as a mother that we care about and actually care about what you're doing, then you know.
Well, I think I think that we'll end up with her continuing down the path to darkness, even if she's kind of got these conflicted moments where because it's her family that's involved, and because her family's involved, I think we're getting the...
Is that the foil then between her and her son? Because he's like, when his family's involved,
not caring. I think so. I think we got a little bit of that going on. So we're kind of glossing over the interrogation here. So this is sort of the heart of the episode, is this polygraph. And the as he's going through the polygraph and being asked these questions, he's flashing back to this torture that he went through on the island. And we're finally getting the answer to where did those scars come from. And he's being asked, have you killed anyone? And
he
takes a long time to answer, and he says yes, and he looks at him, and then he says, I killed your daughter. I'm responsible for that. But although, yes, he does feel responsible for that,
and this
present day Oliver definitely carries a lot of guilt for that.
Yeah.
That's not what he was answering yes to. And it's really clear.
Yeah.
And huge, huge props to Stephen Amell for that performance. Because in those 5 seconds, he gave us all the information that we need to know. He's killed a lot of people now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the death toll that we've got since this show started I think it's a fraction of the damage that he's done since he landed on that island and since he's sort of become the hero that he is now, right? Like all the stuff that he's gone through. So I think we're going to start to see that as his story sort of progresses and we see more and more of him on the island.
Well, and you notice that the island is kind of deserted when he was picked up. So that might tell you something, right? Like, I don't know. Like, you never know. But, and then you have Laurel really hearing that moment where he said he was tortured. And that's, like, the thing she really sort of clung on to, this idea of what he was going through.
Much like it is for us, I feel like Laurel sometimes is who we're experiencing a lot of the show as. And her moment of realization is also our moment of realization of exactly what he's been through. And what the trials were like while he was on the island.
And I'll say this party idea was awesome.
The party is great. And... I'm terrible. I've forgotten your name, but one of our listeners who's sent in emails and stuff before has pointed out that the number on his prison uniform is the hex code for green.
Oh, no way!
Yeah. So if you put that in, and like a hex code is a 6-digit number for colors on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so if you go into Photoshop, you can put in the hex code and you can see the color of green that he's actually wearing right there, which I thought is just
genius on the part of the costume design. That's fantastic.
So great. So great. And keen eye to that listener. And I'll give you the proper shout out in the next episode. I apologize for not remembering your name.
No, but that's fantastic.
But yeah, and great moments with him being the party boy. And pretending like he's still that guy. And now he's saying to Diggle, you have to...
put on the hood.
Yeah, you gotta go be the vigilante.
Was there a show that did something like this at one point in time where someone had to put on a hood and pretend to be Green Arrow? Or a cape at one point? And a cape at some point. They both did it to one another. Oh my god. A classic Smallville trope. Lois thinks that I'm the Green Arrow. Can you go be the Green Arrow so I can be seen not as the Green Arrow?
Also just classic superhero stuff because the number of times that Superman's put on Batman's cowl in order to cover for him or Batman has put on the Superman costume in order to make sure that Clark doesn't get caught. Like it's a classic superhero cliche, but I like how they wove it into the story to make it organic, because it is. And there's a little bit of an aspect here that, like, well, when did he put this plan together?
Yeah.
I think that he always had the idea that he was going to have to do something to convince everybody that he wasn't.
Yeah, it's convenient that he got arrested right after Diggle.
I think that his plans got accelerated a little bit, and I think that he had planned on revealing himself to Diggle that night anyways.
Right.
But it made it a little bit more difficult once Diggle got shot. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing that he didn't account for, I think. Because at the beginning of that episode, I think we felt like...
A little bit, like he was talking to Diggle and made some of those comments where Diggle was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we were kind of getting there, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that he was getting ready to bring him in there.
Yeah.
We also just found out that the head of security for Queen Industries has died in a mysterious car accident. Yeah. Which is a bit of foreshadowing, maybe, for Walter's little foray.
Why you got time bomb on him, man?
Well, you know, I do, but at the same time, or the way things go in this episode, I'm not giving him enough credit.
He gets it. Because, he gets it.
Because, he's a smart character. Yeah. So, we've got a cool scene between Laurel and Oliver.
Is this the scene?
Oliver's bedroom.
Is this the scene?
Yeah.
I wore those horrible fishnets!
They reference back to a Halloween the last time she was in that room, and she says, I wore those horrible fishnets, which is a reference to Black Canary, because the Black Canary costume famously has the fishnets. She essentially wears a strapless one-piece bathing suit
with fishnets
and a leather jacket, right? Like, that's the Black Canary costume. So, so really cool. But then we go straight from those jokes into this really intense scene between the two of them.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, it took me a while to appreciate the scene. I had to reflect on it a little bit, because, I don't know, I was kind of...
I like it. I like where they're going with these two, because it's, they're giving us what we want, but they're also keeping us at arm's length with it, because you've got the nice soft lighting on her eyes there to indicate that this is a romantic scene, everybody, in case you didn't know. They're giving us that stuff that we want, because it's a CW show. They know their audience. They know why we're tuning in. We're tuning in for the personal relationship stuff. The fact that he's a superhero, or that there's other crazy stuff going on, is the bonus. That's the icing on the cake on shows like this.
And I kind of like the pain in his thing where he's like, why don't you hate me? Like, he's basically in that line, the why don't you hate me, he's telling her, why are you making this hard for me? Like, if you hated me, it would be easy. Yeah. And it's just
My plan was to keep you at a distance, and you keep coming back.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. There's, like, this magnetic force pulling these two together. And it's sort of like a fate thing. It's a lot like in Smallville with Lois and Clark, and it took us a lot of seasons to get there. But it was always sort of this force that was bringing the two of them together.
Things,
And it had really great payoff in that. So hopefully they can do the same thing for this. Because we get the awesome, awesome scene right now of him unbuttoning the shirt.
Yeah.
And her discovering these scars for the first time. And it's very... I don't know, like, it's very kind of soapy.
Why do the shows get
and
scar cameos? Like,
yeah.
Look at the makeup cameo on this, like, scene. Like, they got, like, two different shots of it. And I feel like that they probably know exactly where all of these scars come from. Because we now know where the cut on his, under his stomach is.
Yeah, like,
and then the one on the top right hand is the arrow.
Yeah.
We still, my god, did we see if he had the tattoo when he was being tortured? I wonder if he had the tattoo.
I didn't pay attention. We'll have to go back. We'll have to go back and check that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is kind of it's a bit of a roadmap, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're kind of, you know what? It's interesting because we had Deadshot two episodes ago, and he had his roadmap, all of his victims tattooed all over his body.
Yeah,
and he's not dead, by the way. Let's be
not,
really
yeah,
clear.
No, yeah,
he's clearly not dead.
Yeah,
he'll be back. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but let's just say.
Yeah.
Hopefully here we'll get to see. In
oh,
this
we
scene,
didn't. We didn't talk about. Chest. They did kiss. Laurel and Ollie kissed.
Yeah, they kissed. It kind of comes to a head.
Yeah, that's good. And now they're getting beat up.
Sorry, we're back on the island in case anybody was unclear.
Yeah. Sorry.
And Yelfay shoots an arrow at Deathstroke's face, and Deathstroke just. He stops it right in front of his eye.
Snaps it with his thumb.
But that's a Green Arrow signature right there, as far as we can go on this show, because I think in the first episode we see that the mask kind of has a hole through the eye, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And we see him shoot through the eye on Deadshot.
Oh, yeah.
So where Yao Fei maybe failed on that, Oliver
perhaps
won't
we'll
fail.
See if Oliver
so,
and he's getting rescued. Here we go, and then out of the tent. So there you go, that little brief encounter with Deathstroke
and Yao Fei, yeah. And nice action sequence in what is otherwise a fairly dramatic episode, right?
Yeah.
Not really a lot
of
superhero.
There wasn't a lot
of
action in it, really.
Stuff.
It was just like that. And
Yeah. Well, even the stuff with when Diggle, we'll see in a minute, when Diggle...
Was barely...
Yeah. It's interesting. He never uses the bow and arrow.
I know.
Which I thought was really cool. That's an intelligent move.
Yeah.
To not have him...
trying to shoot a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, because that would have been the one thing to give it away. The guy couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So he just pops in and does his...
chokehold.
His spec ops stuff. Yeah.
Because he can hold his own, which is good. Electricity crackles. Ooh, I like that stage direction. Whatever it is.
The script note?
Yeah,
the screenplay note?
Yeah.
So we got these guys, this gun deal that's going down, that's sort of the opportunity for the vigilante to be seen, in a place that Oliver is clearly not, because Oliver's under house arrest right now.
Yeah,
and Diggle looking pretty good in the hood.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean that to rhyme.
No, but it is.
Good.
And then here we have Walter and Moira.
So this is the scene that makes Walter... I've been enjoying his character since the second episode immensely, in this episode, he's jumping up to Detective Lance status for me, because the fact that he's sort of putting this all together, and then he didn't go down to do stuff himself, he sent somebody else, which was smart.
Yeah.
The head of security, who he figured he could handle his own, right? Like, hold his own. Yeah. But he's mysteriously died, and so now, rather than being clandestine and trying to solve this problem himself, he's just coming right out and saying to Moira, what's going on? Like, you need to level with me. You need to tell me what's happening. And she doesn't play games with him, which I think is really bold writing for them, for her to come out and say, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. You're way out of your depth.
And in this episode, in this scene, you really get the fact that they're married and have been for a few years.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first time where you really sort of see that they actually, like, understand each other as human beings on some level because of their relationship, which I kind of like that they played a little bit in this scene, because I've never seen a lot of chemistry with them on screen at all and being like, I believe these two as a couple. But in this scene, I kind of get it. Like, I'm like, okay, I get that they're both.
Well, and you can see that he's really hurt by the fact that he's been kept out of the loop on all this stuff.
Yeah, because he throws in the husband line there, right? Like,
yeah.
It's good. Oh, and here we have an assassin come for Ollie, who's talking on his phone.
Now, when you saw this, did you assume right away that he was being sent by John Barrowman? Because that's what I assumed.
That's what I assumed, but is
character.
He not?
Do no, we, he is.
He was,
is.
Yeah, no, okay,
yeah.
Good.
I just I was just curious if anybody else out there thought that maybe...
I thought that isn't that the only person that's out to get Ollie, though? Like, really?
But we don't know that,
right?
Oh, I guess
we don't.
Because
it could be...
It could also be, this guy from the island. It could be a lot of people.
Oh, yeah,
because he's
okay.
making a lot
it
of enemies.
It totally could.
So.
You know what? That actually is better. Maybe I was wrong to assume... First thing I did. And I really, kudos to Detective Lance here for just really stepping on up and being like, you know what?
Yeah, he comes in, the double tap, puts the guy down.
You put him down and he's like pulling the punches. He's like, okay, you're fine and I'm going to let you go. And
this line is so perfect too, after everything's fine and they say, well, we got the report that the vigilante was attacked across town. That somebody was attacked across town. It was the vigilante that was ID'd by several witnesses.
Yeah.
And then she says...
Here's her, in light of that, the son of your charges are being dropped. And what does she say here?
She's like, I'm sorry what's happened to your family, but with all due respect, could you kindly get the hell out of my house? And it's just like... It was an awesome moment. You see where Oliver gets it from.
Yeah.
That's
good.
That's
and
very
look at his
in
face.
Line.
He's just kind of like...
Because he lost, and he's not happy about it.
And I'll notice here that Ollie says Mr. Lance, not Detective Lance, because he's shifted into boyfriend mode, right? Like, that's the mode where you're like, Mr. Lance, I'm like...
He's apologizing to the father.
Not to the detective.
Which
is nice. So yeah. You really get that here
absolutely.
It's good.
Yeah,
there's subtleties that they're finding and they're really playing on those.
This is a quick episode, and there was sorry if we're missing stuff.
Yeah, we're missing.
But
tons
these
of stuff.
Scenes are flying.
Yeah, by. Yeah, that's insane. It's good. Oh,
so now she's Moira has shown up, and I'm trying to look up his name.
Yeah, we'll just keep calling him John Barrowman for now. But in his office, really, he really talks about it. This guy, you can tell that John Barrowman's Dom, or this character, whoever it is really understanding. And I have to say, Moira seems a bit blind for this. You would assume that if you were part of some, whatever, Cult of the Squiggly Lines, whatever we're calling it, that you'd have some sort of sense, and the first thing you'd put two and two together, oh, we went out to kill your husband. He had all this information. And he died, and the son came back, and maybe he has some information. And this vigilante came with them, and he seems to be targeting people on this list. I just don't understand.
IMDb is making this really difficult for me because John Barrowman's not listed.
I know, he's not listed. Yeah.
And I think that's on purpose because I don't think we're supposed to know his name yet.
Yeah, I found that. That's what I found last episode too. I couldn't find
him. It's very shadowy.
But look, I will burn your entire, right? She has this line where she's like, I've done everything you ever asked. And then she steps up and is like, but don't mess with me. And I'm wondering how much I can take her seriously. Like, just in terms of what is her actual game? Here, I'm trying to figure that out still.
I don't know that she's a well-intentioned character. Yeah. I don't think that we can go that far yet in saying that that she's a good person, but we do know.
What's in this bag he just gave him? You breathe, you survive here longer. No, I'm coming with you. So he gave him a bag here. Yalfay gave him the bag that he found on the floor.
See, and I think I don't know. We haven't seen what's inside it yet. So, I felt like I was on the tracks.
You breathe, you stay here longer. And remember the first thing he said was breathe. So this idea, I feel like there's something, it could have to do with breath, maybe with lying and the polygraph. Maybe that's how
I think
the
it's just, I think it's just about Oliver is kind of running around then, in Abercrombie, Oliver is running around kind of with no restraint, calmness or anything like that. Whereas it's very different from
this Oliver,
current Oliver who we're watching right now.
Being owned by Laurel.
Yeah, being
right?
confronted by Laurel, but there's no emotion. Well, there's emotion. Yeah. He's obviously upset by it, but he's stone-faced, right? Yeah, he's in control. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we're supposed to take away from that. Yeah. That's why the lying becomes easier, because he's gained that control over himself. He's learned to breathe, which is what Yaofei is saying to him.
And this scene is so much different from the previous, right? The previous encounter with the two of them was that passionate sort of intense emotional scene. Yeah. And then she comes back in this idea that she's seeing through him of everybody, right? She really is understanding where he's at. And I don't know, that sort of,
It's killing me though, because he's saying here, I thought you'd see me as something different, not as some vigilante guy as damaged. And it's but Oliver, you are the vigilante. It's this thing where I don't know that he's really accepted what he's become. And we can kind of see it in this scene between him and Laurel that he doesn't want to accept that. He doesn't want to accept that that's the person that he is now. He wants, you can tell that he really wants to go back to being the Oliver that he was before. I think we saw that in the scene with the ice cream in the second episode. The second episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, where that's who he wishes that he could be, but he can't be that anymore.
I want to preface that. Wishes he could be only with her.
Yes.
I would actually preface. Yeah. In terms of, it's only in these scenes between the two of them that you ever get a glimmer of that. Because I actually think that he much more respects himself now than he did ever before. I think he
it's at what cost, right? Because it's that darkness, and he says, I have to lie to her. So keep her at arm's length, sort of thing. And Diggle's going no, you're wrong. That's not how you actually feel. You're trying to convince yourself. You need to. In the same way, I think Diggle, what Diggle is trying to say is the same way that you've told me, you've let me in. you need to let her in because clearly you are attached. Like, yeah. Clearly there's more going on here than you're willing to admit right yeah. now.
And I'm getting the second, like, another undertone of this damage thing. It always helps when, the closed captions come over an yes. interesting thing. It's the idea of lying and how yeah. the lies are permeating Moira's and Walter's relationship and damaging and their relationship. And yeah. Right? So, like, you really get all these multiple levels to this lie. Yeah. And the idea that, like, that Laurel and Detective Lance's relationship is damaged because of the death of their daughter. Right? Like, there's lots of... Yeah. of different elements.
Well, and we just got a new level to Detective Lance where we see that
yeah.
that he's a little bit fall down drunk there mm-hmm. and that's sort of an allusion to what Laurel was saying earlier in the episode that you don't know what it was like after you guys were presumed dead and,
yeah.
and you know, like her sister
mm-hmm.
is dead.
Mm-hmm.
He lost himself in his work,
yeah.
and I think we're seeing that's what we're seeing there is yeah. like the drinking and the determination mm-hmm. to stop the vigilante.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are all of the things.
Oh, and then this, what a brilliant way to end the episode,
yeah.
right? This is just, oh my gosh,
yeah.
like I don't even, like he just, without, he's just kind of like, oh yeah, everything's good. And like the first thing he does when he gets out of house arrest.
Yeah.
Is go and slaughter a whole bunch of arms dealers.
Well,
like,
okay, so I wanted to talk about this because the first guy he takes down with the arrow,
yeah,
we see he uses sort of a new gadget arrow, which is
yeah.
this the dual arrows with the chain in the middle,
right? Yeah, oh, yeah
to incapacitate
yeah.
the guy.
Yeah.
Now he does shoot an arrow at somebody.
Maybe he doesn't actually. Kill
I don't
them.
Know that
I
he kills
maybe.
Him, and we don't
but he's like,
see.
You don't, but you have
Wait,
failed
arrow,
this city, arrow whistling.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the main guy and not the minions, but
yeah.
he does. I would say it's super hard to argue with the logic of where that episode is wanting you to end.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
idea that he is, you have failed the city and no, like, no
but
second
it,
chances.
But it happens off screen. So the fact that it happens off screen makes me go, there's, they want us to question it, I
okay.
think.
Okay.
They want us to look at it and go, is he lost? Like,
right.
like, because I think what we're supposed to get at this point is
mm-hmm.
that in those, in the first few episodes,
mm-hmm.
we see him come back and he is brutal, right?
Yeah.
Like, there is
yeah.
no mercy being shown.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's figuring out how to do what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
so he makes a few mistakes in the beginning.
Yeah.
But that it's not for a lack of trying, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, correct.
Like,
yeah.
he is trying to like wreak vengeance on these evil people in the
yeah.
city, the people who are poisoning the city in
mm-hmm.
his words, right? So there's that, and then we start to get that little bit of Diggle saying like, I'm gonna do this, but I'm gonna do this to stop you from losing yourself,
right.
because that's
yeah.
the killer, the murderer,
yeah,
that's not who you are.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna be here to stop you when you get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then this episode in particular, he's acknowledging those things, and Laurel is recognizing those things. And last week with
right.
Laurel seeing the vigilante
yeah.
do what he does and being afraid, and him
yeah.
seeing that and reacting
yeah.
to it,
yeah.
He's sort of at a crossroads in his journey as the vigilante, as Green Arrow of. And I think that's why he's not being called Arrow or Green Arrow yet.
Yeah.
And that's why he's being called the Vigilante, because he's not a superhero yet.
He's
right
not.
Now, he is a vigilante. He's out there killing.
Well,
these are bad guys. These
yeah.
are murderers in their own rights, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, whether or not some of these characters have actually killed anybody themselves isn't important. The fact is, like, this guy that he may or may not have just killed is putting guns in the hands of gangbangers in Starling City, which is leading to deaths,
yeah.
right? So these guys are murderers, like
yeah.
in a moral sense.
Yeah.
These people are contributing
yeah.
to the deaths of innocent people.
Yeah.
So that's his logic, right? So like as a vigilante, it's sort of he's evening it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think like that's the way that we're supposed to feel about it is that the scales are tipped so far in one direction that this is what he has to do to even things out.
Yeah.
But he's also going down that path himself. We talked about that a little bit last week with the dead shot and
yeah.
all
yeah.
of those things that he is kind of becoming that character. He is kind of going down that path, and Diggle is going to be the one who's there to let him know when he's straying too far to one side. And Laurel is definitely sort of the compass that's going to keep him on track, I think. And so that makes me question, does he kill the guy at the end, or does he just incapacitate him and call the cops, like put them in jail, right?
It's taken all my effort to listen to you talk about, like, this whole thing, because I have completely interpreted the episode entirely different than you.
Yeah.
I think that the point of this episode, through all of it, mm-hmm. is that, like, he's still the same person. Like, this idea that it didn't even faze him, the thought of him going to jail. He didn't care about his family at all. He had a mission that he was going to. He had no problem if he had to sacrificing Diggle. Like, he wasn't going to sacrifice Diggle. He knew he could take care of himself, but he's kind of like, put on this costume that everybody wants to shoot at you wearing. And through all of this, he still is like, nope, you know what? It's one thing. I'm free, but that's fine. My life totally doesn't matter anymore. I have this mission, and I'm totally on it. And I actually think, too, that last scene with Laurel where he's talking about that he didn't want to appear as damaged and all that stuff, I think that he thought he totally was lying to her. Yeah. Isn't that the whole thing? That, like, Diggle is seeing what Oliver doesn't want to see himself, and that's where it'll twist it. But right now, I think Oliver is totally conscious and making these choices to shut his emotion out entirely and really keeping it as this, like, cocoon around him. So this idea that he's just, like, putting himself into this mission to, like, get this list taken care of is really clouding everything that he's doing. And that's sort of what I got the most from this episode, was the fact that, like, this episode, something happened, he sort of got taken to jail, but it didn't really faze him at all, and sort of just moving, like, I don't know.
See, I agree with you on a lot of that I don't think that any of the plot points of what happened in this episode really fazed him. Yeah. As he says at the beginning, it's all part of the plan.
Yeah.
So I think, like, he's trying to work that five or 10 steps ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
I think what Diggle is trying to say to him is that the one thing you haven't accounted for is Laurel and is your feelings about her. And the fact that she is seeing right through you, and you can keep telling yourself that, you know, that you lied to her and that, you know, you're keeping her at a distance. But really, he says, the sad thing is that I think you really believe that.
Yeah.
And I think what Diggle's trying to say is, like, look, you might think that you're fooling people, but you're not fooling anybody.
Right.
Everybody sees that there is something severely wrong.
Right.
People might not know to the extent that Diggle now knows, right?
Yeah.
But of all of these characters, I mean, Detective Lance, his gut is telling him one thing, and his head's telling him another thing. And that's where I think a lot of his frustration is coming from. But that same gut is leading Laurel to believe and feel certain things about Oliver's character. So even though he may think that he's got everybody fooled, he definitely doesn't have her fooled. She knows that something's wrong, and she's gonna put it together eventually. And and when it happens, it's gonna be a huge blowout because he's just been lying to her the whole time.
Well, and you also have that where you had that one, again, a throwaway shot that we didn't really pay attention to, but where Speedy is holding on to the arrowhead and looking. I didn't even know what she was looking at on her monitor. It was a news story of some kind. But the idea that she knows Oliver was lying to her about that as well, like the arrowhead thing, that she's, like, she's not dumb either, right? Like, they haven't ever set her up to be dumb, which I'll give them that, right? Like,
she might be obnoxious.
She might be obnoxious sometimes, but like, they are still keeping her.
Yep.
So it's a very interesting episode.
I mean, this is where I'm going to go back to it. A few episodes ago, we said we didn't really know where to start gauging stuff, how many levels there were going to be, and the third episode definitely let us know there's going to be a lot of levels, and this episode is definitely letting us know there's way more levels than you guys think, right? Like every episode, they keep on adding another layer to a character, and this one over here is doing this, is behaving this way that's different.
Yeah.
And so now we're going, okay, what does that mean for that character, right? And we keep building on all of these different aspects of them. Because, I mean, we thought one thing about Walter last week, and now this week we think another thing entirely, right? Yeah, like, and same with Moira, who was going in one direction, and now we're like, wait a second, are we... You know, was that a foregone conclusion? Were we, you know, sort of making some of these assumptions a little bit too quickly and judging the characters a little bit too quickly?
And I want to know what's going on the island. I'm so fascinated by Abercrombie Oliver right now. I'm really liking all of these. I want more. I actually would not be adverse to them starting to flip the percentages on how much of now we have and how much of the island we have, because I feel like we could definitely do with a little bit more of that character development, because that's so interesting.
I do think that with this episode, we took a step in that direction, because we started on the island, and we spent a sizable amount of time there. There was a lot.
Yeah, there was.
I mean, there was a lot that happened in this episode in particular. Just in general. Like,
they're shoving a lot of story into these episodes. Yes. All of them. Even last week's episode was a lot of story. I think it's just how it's handled, right? And maybe the type of story and how it's being dealt with, but... Yeah, it's good. There's definitely no lack of sort of plot points to go along with our consumption of the series. So
I
wonder where they're going to go. Right? They've got so much to work with.
Yep. So on that, I think we'll bring it to a close there for Damaged. But next week we've got the episode Legacies, and we've got an introduction to some other DC Comics villains, a reinterpretation actually of some DC Comics villains, the Royal Flush Gang, which is these guys we see in the preview that we've kind of got on the end of this episode. Mm-hmm. These guys in hockey masks, and they've got card symbols. The one that we see really clearly in the preview is an Ace of Spades. Cool. So that's the Royal Flush Gang, which has had a lot of different interpretations in the comics, and has been one thing for a little while, but is now kind of going, like, they've reinterpreted it as these bank robbers. So we'll see where that goes and how Legacies play into that, because that title...
I'm already interested in the island stuff on Legacies. Yeah. And the Moira storyline, the Moira Walter storyline, I think is going to be really interesting in that kind of an episode.
But I think I don't think we're going to see Walter for a while, because he left for Australia.
So Moira John Barrow.
I think that we're going to see more of that story develop, but we're going to see it develop without Walter. So
interesting.
Interesting. That was a twist I didn't see coming, is him leaving. I'm sure it's not a permanent thing. I think it's like we said before, but we're talking about budgets and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so if we can remove that character for the time being until he's important again, now we have a good excuse for him not being on screen.
Right.
Fair enough, so we don't feel like we have to shove him in for a 5-minute scene that's going to eat up really, really valuable screen time for the stories that we have to tell, because it seems like it's ramping up. Like, it really feels... I think one of the best things about the season so far is that it keeps escalating. Every episode keeps escalating, and the stakes are getting... Like, we understand what's going on. We understand that the city is corrupt. We understand that he's trying to clean it. We understand all of these things. But it just feels like the pressure is building and building and building, and with Deathstroke being in this episode, and definitely that ending, it just feels like things are going to build up. And I think right before the Christmas break, we're gonna get the release of all that pressure in a mid-season finale. So,
and I will say, you've just made me think of one thing in terms of you talking about the stakes in the city. I say maybe we're looking at it through rose-colored glasses because it is Vancouver that we're looking at, but the one thing I haven't gotten is how the city's corrupt. We keep getting shown this billboy, this billionaire playboy lifestyle, but I'm not seeing the city crumbling.
That's the one thing,
the darkness of the city, I don't have those stakes yet.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that I'm kind of interested in seeing them explore, right? Because if you have all these big bad guys, I'm kind of like, well, why are they so bad? I don't see the other side of that.
Well, I think that we were supposed to see a little bit of it in that, in I think it was the second episode when he goes to that neighborhood.
Yeah, but that's like...
It was a little bit. Yeah. And we're only five episodes in, so they have lots of opportunities. True. I think we'll see a little bit of it with the Royal Flush Gang, because I think that they'll be based out of Starling City.
Nice. Okay.
And so that'll be sort of insinuating that these are the sorts of... And we saw the gang tonight.
The gang of guys all dressed in red
that are looking for heavy weaponry, right? And that's the sort of stuff that's going on in the city. Yeah. We may not have seen the consequences of these things yet, but I think that we will at some point. I'm sure that we will at some point see what's, you know... But those are the sorts of things that you need to dress up parts of the city and that sort of thing.
Like when Ollie shows sympathy for a bad guy and then he kills people. That would be interesting.
We'll see.
Look at me
Sorry. We'll see. Cool. That about does it for us. You guys can... Feel free to let us know what you thought of this episode, as you already have started to.
Yeah, you can email us, mail@quiverpodcast.com. Also, give us a tweet. I really like tweets. @quiverpodcast is our Twitter handle.
Yep.
We also got the Facebook.
And we have the Facebook, facebook.com/quiverpodcast, and quiverpodcast.com, and you guys can leave comments on there as well as on the Facebook, and shoot us messages through Twitter and the emails and everything. Yeah. So... thank you for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yay! Bye. Arrowheads.
This is our fifth episode? Yes.
What's our fifth episode?
Damages.
Damaged.
Damaged. Damages is a TV show. See, now I can put that at the very end. Not all that other stuff that we don't want people to hear. But this will also be at the end, just so we're clear.
Okay. We're not very good at the silence.
For the people who listen all the way to the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's good. It's like a little prize.
Mm-hmm.